You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. And we took Memorial Day Monday off because that's, I don't know, we wanted to do that. So we delayed
the American way.
Yeah, it's the American, it's what we're supposed to do. So we're done with that long weekend, we could get back to what we really enjoy, which is answering your mailbag questions. So this is part one. Part two will come out later in the week, but let's get started with our first question. This comes from Tayshawn Flats. The talent that Miami has interviewed and worked out so far are more late first-rounders or early second-round picks. Would it make more sense for this Heat team to try to make a trade with, say, Portland for the 15th and 20th pick for their 14th pick in cash? That's the question. David, what do you think?
That is an interesting one. Well, I was looking at some of the – I don't have the list of players that Miami's brought in off the top of my head. Do you know exactly who they brought in? I know that it was – Ivan Rabb and others like that along the same lines, guys that probably will fall later in the first round of the draft, right?
Ivan Rabb, they brought in Jonathan Motley. They brought in Thomas Bryant from Indiana, and then several straight second-round picks like Dwayne Bacon from Florida State.
Right. UCLA center, Ike.
Oh, Ike. Name we can't figure out. We should stop trying. The UCLA center, the only center that they have.
Right, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, I was looking into it a little bit, and there was actually a great piece from Ira Winterman, I think it came out last week, where he interviews Chet Kammer and talks to them about the whole workout process and everything else like that. And he brings up a very valid point that the last time the Heat had a top pick in the lottery – they never worked out either Caron Butler or Justice Winslow. I imagine maybe they probably had workouts with Wade and Beasley, being that they were top five picks at that point. But when they're later in the first rounds, it gets a little bit more difficult to predict who's going to slip where. Remember, Butler and Winslow both slip considerably in their respective drafts. So there's also the politicking of when you schedule these workouts. A lot of agencies now, agents have workout days for their clients because it behooves them to show their players on a one-on-one basis where they highlight whatever skills. They can control the tempo. They can control what shots are put up and how. They work with in a regular setting. They work with regular coaches, guys that feed them the ball in just the right places, rather than having them go two-on-two, three-on-three in some situations for a team where Spoelstra can run them through particular drills. And maybe they're not as adept, they don't look as fluid, and that could hurt their stock draft. So agencies want to control as much as possible the setting for these workouts so that their clients could go higher in the draft. And if you have a guy who's slipping somewhere in between 5 and 15, you want to make sure they go in that earlier range rather than the later one. And part of the way you do that is by, again, controlling the workout sessions. So I wouldn't read too much onto who Miami's had worked out. They'll probably attend other workouts later on, again, controlled by the agents, and that'll give them a chance to at least see some of the players they're more interested in taking with a top pick. As far as the trade with Portland?
Well, I want to chime in there because I agree with you completely. I agree, but I also disagree a little bit. I agree that you're completely right about the politics of the workouts, and it's so hard to and it might just be a smokescreen too. I mean, working out Ivan Rabb could be something that the Heat are trying to do to drum up interest in the idea that, hey, maybe Miami really is looking at Ivan Rabb, and Portland all of a sudden says, well, we want Ivan Rabb, let's trade up with Miami, and then maybe Miami can get an extra pick out of it. I don't know. That's something that maybe happens more in the NFL draft, I think, as opposed to the NBA, where teams typically just take the guy that they like and then move on. But I disagree in the sense that I think there is something you can read out of who they worked out, where it tends to be big men in that fringe first round, second round area. Miami doesn't have a second round pick. Why would they be working out a Thomas Bryant out of Indiana? It seems strange to me that you would be wasting your time on that when you only have one pick. And we've talked so much on this podcast about it's not only one pick in this draft, but they might not have a pick in next year's draft. They don't have a second round pick until the year 2022 currently at their disposal. So why would you waste time on this when you really should be going all in on this 14th pick and trying to make the best, most educated decision you can for the 14th pick in the draft? Well, it does make me think that they would be interested in trading down or acquiring a second round pick with cash or in some other way. And they do tend to be looking at guys who play center, like maybe a like project as a backup center or like a project center that they can hide in the G League for a little bit with the Skyforce, or a guy that could, is a little bit more versatile like a Jonathan Motley or John Collins or even an Ivan Rabb who could play the four and the five. So I think there is something to read into that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it's Miami more than most teams probably extends their due diligence considerably. I think they probably do as much research on as many players as possible, hoping that either one will slip in the draft, fall out of the draft completely, in which case they can swoop them up, offer them a free agent contract, bring them into their very well-established D-League system, and coach them up so that they can get to the pros that much more quickly, which is always something that a player wants. So maybe the guys that are more in the second round, maybe mid to late second round options, might fall out of the draft altogether, in which case Miami might be able to again, take them and include them into the Skyforce. So I don't know. I don't think there's much to it. And again, I think they're probably building as much of an encyclopedic knowledge about as many draft picks as possible. And what we've seen with Winslow and what we saw with Butler, et cetera, you know, there's probably going to be a guy who's scheduled to go in the top 10 who's probably going to fall out of the top 10.
Yeah.
Right now, a lot of people think it's Markkanen. Look at how highly rated Markkanen was before the last couple of weeks, and all of a sudden it looks like he's more and more likely to slip to 15th, et cetera. You might have a European player who could all of a sudden move up, or even an upperclassman, a guy like Luke Kennard might be able to move even higher into the draft, and all of a sudden that upsets the balance considerably. Mock drafts don't really stick with the any kind of established order, unfortunately. There's no real gauge for how these players are going to fall. Justice Winslow was going to be a top five pick until he wasn't, and then that gave Miami the opportunity to swoop him in. So the workouts are one thing, but I think they're going to do as much research as possible. So if a guy falls out, they'll be likely to get him. It's all about getting their best player in the right fit, I think.
Yeah, and Miami is not going to be able to make this decision. It's a blessing and a curse, really, that they can't trade the pick until they make the pick. And if 14 rolls around and the guy that they want to fall in the draft isn't that guy that falls in the draft like you're talking about, you know, say it's Frank Ntilikina who's the faller of this draft, and Miami doesn't have any interest in him, but they did want Lauri Markkanen or you know, Jonathan Isaac or something like that, and those guys go way up high. Maybe they're at the 14th pick and they're sitting there and they're saying, you know what, there's nobody we like on the board. OJ Anunoby's gone. Justin Jackson's gone. All the guys that we had targeted were gone. Maybe now we just take a player. We get on the phone with Portland or the Pacers or, you know, Dallas or whatever team it might be and say, look, we know you're interested in this player at 14. Let's make a deal here. We'll move down 6, 7, 8 spots and get a second round pick this year. That's probably where it makes more sense to trade. Portland's an interesting team to trade up because they've got not two but three first round picks. It feels like they almost have to trade up, right? Because they've got so many young players. I just think that they have the ammo to move up to higher than 14. You know, like Portland probably move up into the top 10.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I'm looking at the teams that are late in the first round and seeing with whom Miami has an established history, and they really don't. I mean, unfortunately,
Utah's
most of their trade
partners. Utah is a team that kind of might work there.
I mean, the Magic. But that was the prior administration. Sure. You know, obviously, they cleaned house. Memphis is one that they obviously deal with a lot because Chris Wallace was part of the Heat front office at one point. I'm looking at the Lakers at 28 and wondering whether or not Pat could call up Magic Johnson and say, Irvin, think of all the good years we had, buddy. Do me a solid here. Maybe include a player. I can't imagine anybody that they're looking to unload. But maybe they could trade up and you know, for their 28th pick in the draft, and maybe somebody, what's the name of their forward? I'm drawing
Julius
a blank.
Julius Randle.
Well, no, he's a free agent, so he wouldn't count anyway.
Julius Randle's a free agent,
isn't he? Isn't he a restricted free agent?
Restricted. Yeah, you're right. Larry Nance Jr.
Larry Nance Jr. That's what it is.
So yeah, do like Nance Jr. in the 28th pick you said?
Yeah.
Or 14.
Yeah. Mm.
So they would. So Los Angeles is the Lakers are in the same situation Miami's in because they owe the 76ers their pick next year.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't be able to make the trade until after that pick. So it would have to shake out at the end of the first round, But that's something that could certainly happen, right? Like, they, you can get, like, the bare bones of a deal where Miami takes a player at 14 that they sort of like, but they're willing to trade to the Lakers for Larry Nance Jr., and that player that they're hoping will be there at 28. Like, you can make that, and I think that happens pretty often enough in the NBA where you kind of make that framework of a deal, and if the player that they're targeting at 28 gets picked at 20, then, right, you know, deal's off, and you just keep the guy that you picked at 14. But that certainly makes a lot of sense, and as far as Larry Nance Jr., I'm in, because that dude's a baller, and he's wasting away in the Lakers. That's the kind of player that I think you need to get, is a, not to go off the rails too much, but a player who's just kind of like toiling away on a bad team, probably in the wrong position, situation, and you could get him in Miami and play him to the best of his abilities and get him in the right situation. Larry Nance Jr. is like one of those guys, to me at least.
Well, you know, that brings me to the next point, which is, you know, the easiest way to avoid toiling away too much, especially when it comes to buying tickets to your favorite concerts and shows, is to use the SeatGeek app.
Wow, you're really good at these. You're right, because SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for the games, concerts, shows that you want to go to. It's never been easier to get the seats that you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit. No toiling away with multiple browser tabs and everything like that. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I've got the tickets for this weekend or whenever I want to go. This isn't SeatGeek related, but my girlfriend and I were taking a trip to Austin, Texas later this summer. Nice. And we're going through this afternoon, we're going through like the flight plans and all this stuff, and I'm just like, I wish there was a SeatGeek for flights, because that would make this way easier. And kayak.com is supposed to be that, but they're not. Not to like disrespect kayak.com. If you want to sponsor us, you're more than welcome to. But they need, like, SeatGeek is just so easy. I was like, man, I wish I could just be on my phone and then just like go one click on an app and just be like, take me to Austin. And then just like have like, Wes, this is the best thing, that the best value you can have to get to Austin this summer. Anyway, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is guaranteed to give you the most bang for your buck. They give you a grade based on value. Their tickets are backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop with confidence. Best of all, Locked On Heat listeners get a $20 off rebate on their first SeatGeek purchase. How do you do it? Well, download the SeatGeek app on your phone, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LOHEAT, LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOHEAT today. All right, that's our next question, is from Mark Am. I know you read through a lot of trade/draft proposals, but I really like sleeper rookies Semi Ojeleyi, who's getting Draymond Green comparisons, and Peter Jok reminds me of Eddie Jones, Josh Richardson, etc. This is an interesting question, because I hadn't even heard of Peter Jok until this question came up. I had no idea who it was.
I think there's good reason for that. Like, Draft Express doesn't even have any kind of information on him whatsoever.
None. I was like, Draft Express, I'll go to there. I'm like, who the hell is Jok? I'll go through Draft Express, not even on the website. I couldn't find him. And I actually reworded Mark's question, because originally it just said Jok. So I didn't even know the first name. I was like, who the hell is Jok? So I just start Googling Jok, and it comes up with things that aren't people.
Always a slippery slope on the internet.
Always a slippery slope. And so I stopped Googling Jok pretty quickly. But then I'm listening to the Ringer podcast with Kevin O'Connor and Jonathan Charks this morning. And they start talking about this kid from Iowa State named Peter Jok. And I was like, yes. So they start talking about it. I'm able to Google him. And then I'm able to add his name in here. So, Mark, we were able to find your Jok. That's what I'm trying to say.
Phrasing.
So anyway, Peter Jok, Iowa State. He's a four-year player there. We know that the Heat do look at those four-year players favorably, where a lot of other NBA teams don't, typically. He's a 6'6" wing with a 6'8" wingspan. So I looked at his stats. I never watched Iowa State basketball in general, unless they're Cyclones, right? Unless they're in the tournament, I didn't watch them. So Peter Jok took 420 three-pointers in his last two seasons, making 39%. So that's a nice sample size.
Absolutely.
He could spot up shoot, but he struggles off the dribble. And this is just based on various things that I've been reading about him this afternoon. So not my own eye test, full disclaimer. But that is where you talk about a sleeper, guys in the first round who do shoot off the dribble well. That's kind of, I think, what elevates people. But he's a good spot up shooter. He had one of the best shuttle runs at the combine. So that's something that shows he's got a quick first step. I don't know if he has a nice dribble or not, but if he can dribble well, that means he could close out or he could attack closeouts, or something he can at least be molded to do. And his focus remains on improving his defense, according to all of his draft interviews, is that he's focusing on his getting better defensively. So that's Peter Jok.
That kind of rundown, and to me, he kind of screams right away of Anthony Morrow. Is that a fair comparison?
I have no idea. I don't know. This is all I know about him.
No, I mean, it sounds a lot like a guy like Morrow.
He's longer than Anthony Morrow, right? Morrow's
pretty long.
But 6'8 wingspan, that's pretty long.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't have the numbers on Morrow, but I mean, it's basically reduced to a singular talent, which is, spot up shooting.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, and I don't know if he's focusing on defense because he's good at defense or if he's focusing on defense because he needs to get better at defense. But I imagine it's the latter. If he was really good at defense, he'd probably not be a sleeper, right? Like, if you could shoot threes and play good defense, you're probably at least rated by Draft Express. Anthony Morrow, that's a good I kind of like that. Yeah. I kind of like that. I like Mark said he reminds me a little bit of Eddie Jones. I don't Mark maybe Mark's actually watched Peter Jok and knows way more than you and I do.
Yeah.
I like that he's taken over 400 three-pointers and he made them at a really efficient rate. And you're going to, like, at the very least, Anthony Morrow has found a job in the NBA for years, just being able to spot up shoot threes. So if he's if you're getting a guy that's undrafted and he turns out to be Anthony Morrow, that's a really good value, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there's Semi Ojeleye, who I've been really intrigued on. He's a three-year player. He transferred from Duke after 2 years to SMU, 6'6", with a 6'9 wingspan, 240 pounds, or nice, thick frame. He's, like, chiseled, looks the part of an NBA player. His stats are favorable. He made 42.4% of his three-pointers. That looks really good, but then you keep in mind that he only took 172 of them last season. Justice Winslow, by comparison, I'm getting a lot of comparisons for Semi Ojeleye, and that's what kind of got me to compare him to Winslow, is that he's like Justice Winslow but can play more offense. Justice Winslow, in his 1 year at Duke, made basically 42% of his three-pointers and only took 110. Not much less than Ojeleye. It's a really small sample size. You typically want to get that Peter Jok range between 400 and 500 reps from three-point range to really get a nice sample. Their free throw percentages are similar, so I wouldn't look too much into that 3-point percentage. What's your take on Ojeleye?
I like him. I mean, I think any player who's that devoted to building his body at such a young age, he's 22 and a half, so theoretically he's a little bit older than a lot of top prospects, but still young enough, I think, where he can turn around. I like the comparisons from The Ringer. Specifically, they say best case scenario for him is a guy like Jay Crowder or Stanley Johnson, and that makes sense. Both of them, very impressive physical specimens, a little bit stockier than your average wing player, but that gives him the kind of heft that can defend bigs and then switch on to smaller guards as well. So I like that kind of versatility defensively, and the fact that he has NBA range is certainly a plus. I think the Draymond Green comparison is idealistic and unrealistic, unfortunately. He's just simply not that kind of a playmaker or ball handler, which was ultimately what makes Draymond stand out as much as he does, is that he's an incredible passer and a hell of a rebounder as well. But he's just a big-time playmaker, and that's something that I think Ojeleye is not. So
yeah, his assist-to-turnover ratio is horrendous. I mean, he averaged 1.5 assists per game and 1.4 turnovers per game. So he's giving away every ball that – every assist he has, he's given away a turnover. It's not good.
So he certainly fits in that mold of what we talked about in the first question, a guy who's liable to slip. The Ringer has him listed as the 37th best prospect, so that's a mid-second rounder. I mean, that's a guy who has potential, and certainly the physique is there, and he's a guy clearly devoted to making the work. You wonder whether or not that's going to translate to the next level, but there's skills there, and I think the physicality is certainly there. The work ethic is certainly in place. So you wonder just if he can finally fine tune some of those, long range shooting skills to the point where he can become a considerable threat and a consistent one at that.
I mean, I like Ogilvy. My concern is just that if he doesn't have, if that 3-point range doesn't translate, like maybe the stats show. Like I said, it's small sample size. Made less than 80% of his free throws. I worry that we're looking at that athleticism and his size and almost projecting what he can be. If he doesn't have the same feel for the game that a Draymond Green or even a Justice Winslow has, because Justice right. Winslow's feel for the game is elite. I mean, I don't think anybody would say otherwise. I mean, he always seems to make winning plays and he's in the right place at the right time. Ronnie Magruder, same kind of thing. I don't know if he has that. I don't know that he doesn't. But, you know, he was a focus on SMU. He took 12 shots a game. He's not going to take 12 shots a game. Maybe at any point in his career is he going to average 12 points a game. Can he make an impact offensively with 3 or 4 shots a game? I don't know. And that really comes down to whether or not he can hit threes at an NBA range. And then there's that tweener thing where a lot of people are saying, I want a tweener, right? You want that Draymond Green type. You don't know, he's too small to play the 4 full-time and maybe too big to play the 3 full-time. That doesn't always work out, like you're saying. It doesn't always work out where you get Draymond Green. Sometimes you have a guy that just can't play, that you don't know where to play him. That does happen. We've seen it happen time and time again. I like Ogilvy. I'm not – generally, I would bet on what you're saying is, look, this guy's super athletic. He has the potential for 3-point range. We could play him at multiple positions. I like all of that. But those are just my concerns with Ogilvy. I almost like a guy like Devin Robinson from Florida or Devon Reed from Miami a little bit more. A Wundu from Kansas State. There's other guys that maybe I would pick over. Josh Hart from Villanova, another guy. Guys that I pick over Ogilvy maybe. But that's, you know, that's Miami's job. I don't know. It might be one of these guys who do fall out of the draft completely that Miami just kind of scoops up and brings to the Skyforce or something like that, though.
I could definitely see that with Jock in particular. I mean, I think I'm just quickly looking through it. And part of the problem, I think, which has scared off a lot of teams is, one, he's Sudanese-born, so I think there are always questions, fair or unfair, about a player's age when they come from Africa or may have questionable as record-keeping as far as when their childhood is and things of that sort. He's listed at 23. So despite the fact that he was the leading scorer in the Big Ten, there are still questions that, like you pointed out before, he's not listed in any or not many, if any, mock drafts. Mm-hmm. So he's certainly a guy that seems poised to slip past the draft altogether. And if you can swoop him up and get his long-range shooting ability and kind of fine-tune what he does, I think he could be a nice addition.
So we talked a little bit about Winslow already, but we got a couple of questions on Justice Winslow. So I'll read both questions. Okay, I know a lot of Heat fans are impatient with Justice Winslow's development. However, I am not one of those fans. Would you guys think I'm crazy if I said Winslow will be better than Paul George and Jimmy Butler in the long run? That is from Justin Evans.
Oof.
Before you answer, David. We do have a question directed at you. David, how dare you hate on my boy Beasley?
And Beasley. Wes.
And Wes, Oubre is my boy. This was in response to our last mailbag podcast, I think, about a question about Michael Beasley possibly making another return to the Heat.
And plus, you talk about Oubre all the time, so it's not easy to target that.
No, I'm always looking for fellow Oubre fans. Olynyk was totally in the wrong, and Oubre was right to... Anyway, I like Kansas, and so I followed him, and I was excited that someone from Kansas would go to the Heat, but we got Justice, which was was better, but it definitely killed. Anyway, people shouldn't give up on Justice Winslow. I see him averaging 15-plus points a game next season. He's good at driving, and he's really athletic. He just needs to play to his strengths, and when his shot comes, I see a superstar. What do you guys think? That's from Lyle Iawe. I hope I nailed that. So we got two questions basically about Winslow. We can kind of take this in two parts. The first part was Justin Evans's question, which is, what do you got? Do you think Winslow will be better than Paul George and Jimmy Butler in the long run? And then the second part being a little bit more specific about next season. Do you think he can average 15 points per game next season? So let's start with that first one.
You see, to me, the answer is the same. I think, one, I don't see him being able to take that kind of leap next season. And because he's not ever going to take that leap and he's probably not going to make it next season, he's never going to be better than Paul George or Jimmy Butler. I know that might be a particularly strong take. I've never been particularly high. I know that some listeners will point out that I claimed he was going to become a bust. While he's not a bust, I don't think he's reached the kind of level. He has not lived up to a top 10 pick just yet. I'm also kind of torn because I didn't know that a lot of people are kind of impatient about Winslow's development, particularly considering the kind of injuries he went through in year two. I think we were all a lot higher on him after year one when he proved to be such a versatile defender and capable playmaker. Then all of a sudden, with the absence of Dwayne Wade, you know, expectations were pretty high for him, and then the injuries bogged him down, and we weren't able to see what his the next step is for him. I didn't know that a lot of Heat fans were impatient. We haven't heard from them. I think a lot of the people that write into us or our listeners in general are pretty high on Winslow.
Mm-hmm.
Although it does come across as me not being that particularly high on Winslow, just because I don't think he's going to be as good as Paul George, an all-star and all-NBA type player, or Jimmy Butler, another all-star and all-NBA type player.
Where do you project him eventually landing at his peak? Like, what kind of, like, if you could compare him to one player?
Jesus, that is very, very difficult. That is really difficult. Because I think, like, I'm thinking of that last question, so maybe that's why it stuck in my head. But the Jay Crowder comparison isn't necessarily a bad one. Although Crowder's a much better shooter than Winslow is, right, and more likely to be a better shooter than Winslow will ever be. But Winslow is quicker, much more adept passer, a better playmaker in that sense. So he has a different range of skills. So I think we want to see him shoot the ball as infrequently as possible. So I'm wondering how his fit is going to be next year, especially if we continue going in the same trend offensively that we showed last year with a drive and kick game. And it obviously, he could be the primary ball handler, but that takes the ball out of Deion Waiters' hands. If Miami re-signs him, it takes the ball out of Goran Dragic's hands.
So maybe as a sixth man, bring him off the bench and let him play point forward. And that could work, right? If James Johnson ends up taking that start, if he re-signs, number one, and then takes the starting power forward spot, you slide in somebody else at small forward, whether it be Roddy Magruder or somebody that Miami signs or whatever.
Yeah.
You bring Winslow off the bench, and he could take that James Johnson role as the point forward. Maybe that's a situation.
I think that's great. I think he's definitely got the speed and the ball handling. Of that, there's no doubt. The shooting is still problematic and likely to continue being so in his
third season. But he could drive, and I think he shoots off the dribble almost better than he shoots spot up.
Doesn't finish at the rim very well, though.
Doesn't finish at the rim well, but you can get better at that, I think.
Maybe. I mean, we saw a leap from Waiters, and yeah, I think it's possible that Winslow could take the same leap.
And he was dealing with injuries all last season, whether or not he was playing or not. And I want to go back to that point you made about him, about fans kind of being impatient with him, because I have noticed more and more impatience with Justice Winslow, and it is kind of funny, because you're right, after that first year, we were all really high on Winslow, but then all of a sudden you demand more of him on offense, and you say, well, why aren't you better? Well, it's because he didn't spend his first... He played two different ways. You reset the clock on him in his second year, because now you're asking him to go from just shoot when you're open, but play really good defense, get rebounds, you know, drive and kick a little bit in your first year. You've got Luol Deng and Chris Bosh for the first half, and Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic, let them score. And then in that second year, he's asked to play point forward. He's asked to shoot and be better at three-pointers, and he's got all these expectations on him. You kind of reset the clock on him, plus he was injured, only played in 18 games, and all of a sudden Heat fans are like, well, he's a bust, he's not going to be any good. Some Heat fans are optimistic, like Justin, who says he's going to be better than Paul George or Jimmy Butler. But in general, I think we just need to cool it on even, you know, optimistic comparisons and everything, and just, look, the guy's played, he hasn't even played, he's played exactly 100 games, not even.
Right.
Like, let's just cool it on the Winslow stuff. But you bring up an interesting point. How do the Heat view him, and how do they use him moving going forward, especially next season? It could be in any number of ways. It really depends on what they do in free agency.
Exactly right. I mean, if they bring back the players that they currently have as free agents, if they're able somehow to add a guy like Gordon Hayward or potentially a Blake Griffin or something along those lines, that changes things dramatically. But let's assume that the team runs back basically the same roster we had last season. Chris Bosh is gone. You somehow re-signed both Waiters and Wade and James Johnson. And maybe you don't necessarily re-sign Willie Reed, who's looking to cash in, but you're able to draft a versatile big man. Somebody either in the first round or later in the second round or early or late in the first round. I think that's probably if you find a big man who can shoot and space the floor, then that would really make Justice Winslow as a sixth man a really good option, because then that big man would back up Whiteside, and then you're not necessarily lacking for shooting because you still have that kind of floor spacing ability,
right,
even with Winslow in, who is not a floor spacer.
Well, Willie Reed wasn't a floor spacer. You replace the Willie Reed position with a floor spacer, you can make room for Winslow.
Exactly.
Nick, I like that idea a lot. Zach Collins fits the bill. When we talk about the 15 points a game, Winslow averaged basically 11 points a game last season, and he did it on 35.6% shooting, total field goal percentage. So if he just improved his percentage to average, to 43 to 45%, he's probably scoring 15 points a game. But at the same time, he had a usage rate that was extremely high, 19.8% usage rate. He's probably not going to hit that mark again, at least in the short term. So he's not going to get as many shots, is what I'm trying to say. And so as far as a specific 15 points per game, I think that also is just the wrong way to look at it. I think Winslow has a lot that he does well. And he's absolutely, and who was it that said? Yeah, Lyle said that you have to focus on his strengths, which is driving, facilitating for others, and I agree 100%. It's a shame that Winslow is in the NBA today and not in the 80s, for example, where everything about his game would have translated perfectly. He jumps high, he rebounds, he plays great defense. All that stuff that you want is exactly what you want out of Winslow. But now, today's NBA, you basically have to be able to hit 33% of your three-pointers or you're useless. Right. And unfortunately, Winslow's not there yet. I think he still can be. His mechanics are really broken, especially his lower body, but I think they're fixable. But if he can at least just do what he does well in the short term, he will be really valuable for the Heat team. I don't know how good he'll be, but he'll have value, and that's really all you're asking for.
I agree.
All right. Next question. Where is it? Here it is. This one from Billy Kuhn. It's the end of free agency, and Miami still has an open roster spot for training camp. This is a hypothetical. I should have prefaced. So we're heading into training camp. We have seen what Spoelstra did with Deion Waiters and James Johnson. Why not invite Anthony Bennett to training camp? Maybe we can get enough out of him if he gets into shape. Power forward is our weakest position, so why not take a really low-risk swing? What do you think, David?
I don't know if coming into shape is the question mark anymore. I know it was when he was first drafted, and you know it's unfortunate that he was drafted as highly as he was by a dysfunctional Cavaliers front office. Was asking too much of a player like Bennett. I don't know, again, that his overall fitness is the issue. I just don't see him being able to do anything particularly well at the NBA level. He's no longer quick enough or good enough leaper to pull down a number of rebounds. He's too small, but he's not necessarily a playmaker. Again, he's probably physically closer to a guy like Draymond, although he's probably a little taller than Draymond. Maybe a guy like Ojeleye that we were just talking about. But again, not much of a playmaker, and not nearly as athletic, I think, overall. So he's not as good as a three-point shooter. He doesn't space the floor. He doesn't facilitate for others. I'm just struggling to see what it is that he could possibly do well. And it's unfortunate. Again, you never want to criticize a player who may have been drafted. It wasn't his choice to be drafted first overall. You know, I'm sure he's happy with making the money he did, but he didn't want those kind of unrealistic expectations for that draft position. And unfortunately, he's found himself, where was he, Boston, Toronto, Minnesota?
He was in Minnesota, Toronto, and Brooklyn.
Yeah. And he still hasn't even played. I mean, he was drafted three seasons ago,
something like that. But this is a guy who was cut by his Turkish team. I mean, he got cut for Pero Antic, who maybe you remember him from his breakout playoff couple of games when I think Atlanta was playing. I want to say Brooklyn, maybe
or was his role Washington? In various James Bond villain as the James Bond villain in various movies.
Right. I mean. Or him. Look, Turkey just the team in Turkey he was playing for just cut him, and it wasn't like he was blowing the roof off the place either. I mean, he averaged 1.2 points and 0.9 rebounds in 6.4 minutes a game. Now, when you're an NBA player or an American player that goes overseas, and he's not American, he's Canadian, but you know what I'm trying to say, and goes overseas to play in the EuroLeague, you're expected to score. And at the very least, you're expected to play. I mean, he wasn't even, like, you're only allowed so many American spots in the EuroLeague, so that's why they had to cut him for Pereo Antique, but, like, if you're expected to play and expected to score and you still couldn't even get on the court where it's basically preordained as an American player, that says a lot. And I'm not trying to rip on Anthony Bennett. I'm just trying to say it's like that might have been his last basketball job. And look, and when we talk about what's the risk of bringing him in, it's a low-risk swing. I don't even know that it's a high reward. What's the best case scenario for Anthony Bennett? He makes a roster for half a season? I think that's honestly the best case scenario. Again, not trying to rip on him, but I just think it's done. He was a good college player whose skills didn't at UNLV, whose skills didn't translate into professional basketball, and unrealistic expectations just kind of brought him down and he crumbled. And that sucks, but it's the fact. And I think the real risk there is, you know, maybe you don't find the next Roddy McGruder because you're trying to take this unrealistic swing at Anthony Bennett. You don't find the next O'Kara White because you're trying to take this unrealistic swing at Anthony Bennett. I would take O'Kara White right now over Anthony Bennett.
Oh, for sure. I don't think that's there. I mean, with his spacing,
right,
with his speed, length, I mean, versatility defensively, absolutely. He's a much better fit.
So when we're talking about training camp spots, those are like the last guys on the training camp, you know, or a few of the last guys in the training camp. And they ended up making the roster by the end of the season. That's why you don't sign Anthony Bennett. You're looking for guys like that. And we talked about undrafted players with the, you know, earlier in the mailbag. You bring in those guys, fresh meat, so to speak. And, you know, unfortunately for Anthony Bennett, it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
If there is frustration last season for Derek Williams, I would say that Derek Williams still has infinite more upside than Anthony Bennett.
Which says a lot, right?
I mean,
Derek Williams, you know, going to the
Derek Williams fan. Yeah, he sure is. He sure is.
Pat Riley kept his promise. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. To support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.